Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, if you're like many entrepreneurs, you have waited too long. What have you waited too long to do? To find the answers to the questions that you should have asked before you got started. I know. I've done it too. That's just how we are. We get a wild hair and we follow it. We're passionate about something and there we go. I do it all the time. My guest today is David Radlow. He's an author, he's a business leader, and he's a growth expert. You can find him at davidradlow.com, R-A-D-L-O.com. Now, he also does a podcast. It's called The Face of Sustainable Leadership, Disruption, and Growth with David Radlow. He's written a book. He's a best-selling author. Principles of Cartel Disruption. I mean, this guy has done some amazing, amazing stuff. He's an internationally recognized expert in leadership, growth, and innovation. He is a partner of RB Markets Achievemost, a master's professional outside director, a growth coach, and an international Fortune 500 speaker. And I'm going to bring him on the phone here for a second because, David, you got to talk about some of these things that you have done. When I look at, you know, Born Free, Farmer's Best, and Eggland's Best, and then you sold all this. You've done this a number of times, and now you're a philanthropist. And that's really important to you. But talk about your career a little bit, how you got started and where you are today. Just give me 2 minutes on that.
Sure. No, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of fun and opportunities and challenges. Certainly myself, along with my partners, have had that during the way. And it took a while to people that are, you know, fighting and working hard and trying to incrementally improve along the way. It didn't come overnight.
Right.
And certainly we had a few missteps and starts and what have you, even on, you know, on Eggland's Best, and then finally got rolling, and now it's a $1 billion industry with specialty eggs, cage-free, free-range, and nutritionally enhanced. And then in addition to that, you have quite exciting that I was able to sit down with Fidel Castro and open up the market with the chicken and eggs and the whole agriculture community. And I was able to develop a decade-long relationship with Castro.
Wow.
But and doing all that is really, really great. The fact that we were able to do that and we were able to get through both value proposition and people, process, and strategy, and in addition to make sure you have a pitch and make sure it ties into your competitive analysis. And the exciting thing that I'm always excited about is about giving back, because after you do achieve that, it's very incumbent upon you to be able to give back with your time, talents, and contacts. So, I mean, that's what I've been doing the last 7 or 8 years, where I just absolutely love giving back. And I give back to both Tufts University, their entrepreneurship, their nutrition program, their sports program. And in addition to that, Concussion Legacy Foundation. But more than that, there are a lot of small ways that you can give back if you and management say, hey, you know, we have an opportunity to take some time and do a food drive or for that matter, give a few hours here and there, and then maximize the effort by having your whole team go out and do it as well. So, in any event, I'm not here to jump along here, but primarily here that we've had the experience to be able to solve different avenues, and we're able to put a book together, The Principles of Cartel Disruption, that really will deal with an entrepreneur when they're going through the life cycle and the different challenges that you have, that you can grab a manual and just go to it, and then bingo, I've got an issue with strategy. Bingo, I've got an issue with people process. Bingo, I've got an issue with putting a pitch together correctly. Or for that matter, we have to take a look at the value proposition and tie that into the early stage test markets. For that matter, what kind of board do I need or advisory group that I have? And I lay it all out in there. And so it's simple, straightforward, easy to read, easy to go to.
All right. Hang tight. When we come back, we're going to, I mean, this man, the accomplishments, 28 years as CEO, which include delivering a six-fold increase in earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And a 30-fold increase in enterprise value. This is unheard of stuff. And I like to talk to guys like this. It's hard. My brain starts to sweat when he's talking. But we got to listen to this stuff because this is pure brilliance. We'll be right back. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law.
Help. I need somebody. Help. Not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone. Help.
Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs are thinking, help. I need some help. They get themselves stuck right in the middle of life. They've put everything they had into their business and even then some, and maybe some of their family's money as well. And now they're going, oh, my God, what did I forget? Oh, business plan. Oh, what business plan? Well, you know, David Radlow is here, author, business leadership and growth expert. You can listen to his podcast at his website, David Radlow, RADLO.com on the web. And he has a book, which I want to bring him back again and talk a little bit about this. David, your book, Principles of Cartel Disruption. You were dealing with Fidel Castro, you said, for 10 years? Talk about that for a minute.
Well, it was about a decade there when we were able to, and we're still doing business and industry with Castro in Cuba. And to make a long story short, back in 2002, Castro, after the U.S. government passed the Trade Sanction Reform Act, after a hurricane, aid was offered by the U.S. Castro turned down the aid but said, we'd be willing to buy, at which point then we were able to organize a trade mission to go down there. Wow. And to see Cuba and at the same time have an opportunity to meet with him. And we went down on an industry trip, and then I just had an opportunity to get some time and focus some time over dinner, believe it or not, sitting right near him and have a conversation over dinner. And within a short period of time, we were able to get first orders at the time for, I don't know, about 100 containers of eggs. And then we were able to start talk about possibly bringing back some intellectual property, because Cuba has a great biotech industry down there. So, and one thing leads to another, and the next thing you know, you end up having a relationship with Castro. Now, having said that, this is where it's really interesting, because in a previous life, I had a discussion in politics with him, because I worked for, at the time, Bush was in power, and I worked for H.W. Bush in the campaign, and I worked with Andy Carr, the chief of staff, and the head of aid, Andrew Natsios. And all of a sudden, 10 years later, and I'm sitting there, and those things were helpful in discussions. And so you just, what I say is, you just never know when you're going to pull on or use your wealth of resources and knowledge and have that be able to help you in a negotiation. Right. And it was big. We were able to do a tremendous amount of business with Castro and at the same time give back. And one of the things that I really enjoyed doing was giving back to the Joint Distribution Commission, which is Jews in Cuba, and as well as Catholic Charities. We're able to give back there. We're able to give back to the Hemingway Preservation Trust, to Ernest Hemingway's books and records.
Wow.
In boat in Cuba, and also was able to sponsor to have a Christmas display in Havana at the U.S. mission. So all these things that we're able to done, and granted, we did it as much as we could, and I led efforts to doing it, and it was because the fact that we had engagement with Cuba on the commercial side, we were able to do so much good on giving back on the other side.
Isn't that interesting? You know, so many people forget about the give back, the pay it forward, the kindness. And these things are truly what are most important in our lives. And the reason why our world gets so screwed up is because people are so selfish. You're talking about being unselfish. And you've been very fortunate to do a lot of business. I bet you never thought you'd be in the egg business as far as you were, because that's amazing. I want to take a break, come back. I want to talk a little bit about, well, the fact that you are a recognized internationally expert in leadership, growth, and innovation, and how we can help some of these entrepreneurs with some of their problems. But always to keep in mind to be of service. We'll be right back. It is Entrepreneur Weekly.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Don't forget, check out our website, entrepreneur.com. Really simple. There is so much there, a wealth of knowledge, wisdom, understanding, lessons, coaches, everything. You want to buy insurance? You know, it's all there. Entrepreneur.com. Our guest right now is David Radlow and his book, Principles of Cartel Disruption. And you've heard a little bit about him now, but I'm just curious, David, let's talk about this whole, you know, being of service, the philanthropic way of thinking. Where did it start for you? I'm just curious, because I think it's in us, but we don't know what to do with it. We want to be kind. And then sometimes people will take your kindness and turn it into weakness and take advantage. And so then you hold back and, you know, there's all these doubts. And, you know, if I give to this guy, then that guy's going to go, hey, give me some. And it's like, you know, where did it start for you? And then maybe you can walk us forward. How do you do it right?
It has to start with leadership, because leadership in an organization, regardless of how big it is, if you make that commitment that you're going to give back and make it a fundamental part of your business and organization, that is where it starts. And then from there, you look for ways in which you can give back. And it can be as straight as giving some food, whatever you can afford.
Right.
And maybe some time, hours, and then all of a sudden it ends up being a whole industry-wide type of thing where you can have it, it gets contagious, and then everyone starts giving back. And that's the exciting thing about giving back, is that it can be so important and so great, and your impact needs to be so fantastic, but you in leadership have to be willing to take that step forward and say, this is an important part of life, and yes, we have to sustainably make profits and feed everyone's family, while at the same time, we need to be able to give back and help others that are not as fortunate.
So you literally designed it. It's woven into the fabric of your organization from the start. But did that start with you early in business and in life? Or did it happen after? I know you're like a three-time entrepreneur. You know, you've had all these opportunities, and now you have this opportunity. It's easier for you. But was it there in the beginning? Was it in your heart all the way along? Because I think that's really a major factor, is it's got to be in your heart first, doesn't it?
It's in your heart and head. And what I did was, it was more like a formula. Mm. The more growth you had, the more you had to give back.
Mm.
And that is where it is. And so sure, you gave back with money. At one time, it was given back, you know, a third to 40% of profits back in. So some people say, oh, yeah, well, you went way overboard, and I can't give more than 10%, or I can't give more than, you know, a day a week or whatever. Right, you know, and the idea is that you can structure a program that you can give back what you can budget and plan for your organization. So it can have a meaningful, substantial effect. And you may not think it's meaningful. It is very, very meaningful.
Yeah.
Because not everybody does it.
No.
And it's important to show the leadership in making giving back a priority.
Well, wouldn't the world be a different place? You folks, make sure you check out his website, The Face of Sustainable Leadership, Disruption, and Growth, David Radlow. A very interesting man. The book also, Principles of Cartel Disruption. And it's so important to you. It's fascinating that this is such a thrust of your life right now, this philanthropic message that you have. And I like it because, see, it's always been a part of me, even when I didn't have much. I mean, these are biblical principles, you know, shared. You do unto others you would have them do unto you. Love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? These are principles that are in our hearts and we're born with them, but we forget about them through greed and ambition and all that. I love that this is your message. I love it.
And entrepreneurs especially, they can give back their time to young entrepreneurs that are starting off. And you have your time, you have the knowledge, you have the wisdom, and you can help them, whether it's a school, whether or not it's education. You know, I've done it both at high school and coaching someone who ended up there from a Title I Nashville high school in New Hampshire, and they won the Conrad International Challenge at Nashua.
Beautiful.
And all those kids just benefited so well and will carry that through their whole life. And they're... And maybe you can do it at community college. Maybe you can do it in college. Maybe you can do it just through your associations.
Yeah.
And you can give back some of your time.
I love it. I love it. And you know what? There's a blessing behind doing that. Because the giver is truly the receiver. Because you get something much more valuable. Your treasures are in heaven at that point. All right. David Radlow. R-A-D-L-O, davidradlow.com. You can listen to his podcast, check out his book, and learn how to give, learn how to live a life of service. It's rewarding. David, thank you so much. Continued blessings upon you. Thank you.
Alan, appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. We need more brilliance like this. We'll be right back.
To Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Oh my gosh, I have got a special, special guest for you guys. I got to tell you, first of all, I heard this gentleman on a podcast of a friend of mine, Christy Drayling, and I was like, I got to get that guy on my show. And so I called my friend and I said, can you hook me up with this guy? And she's like, absolutely. You guys will be the best friends. And guess what? Now we are. So I want to introduce you guys to Gary W. Goldstein. By the way, film producer, author, entrepreneur. He is the producer of the movie Pretty Woman and Under Siege and Mothman Prophecies. And the guy is an amazing mentor. He's an amazing human being, and I love him. I think you guys will, too. And maybe, just maybe, he might be able to help you in your life. And he's helping me in mine. And you know what? He's helping my son because we became such good friends so fast. We're working together now. That's all there is to it. Gary Goldstein. How you doing, Gary?
I am so fabulous. Thank you, Alan. That was so sweet. I am loving life.
That's awesome. So, Gary has a book out. It's kind of an industry book. And for those of you who think you have a movie inside of you, which a lot of people, they want a movie written either about them or about something in their lives or, you know, something that they feel like can be a movie. His book, which you can buy on Amazon, it's an Amazon number one best-selling book. It's Conquering Hollywood, The Screenwriter's Blueprint for Career Success. And I don't want to get stuck on that. That's just there. I just want to tell people. But you have so many great stories. We could do like 10 hours, just so you know, because based on our conversations up to this point. But, you know, I mean, you're at this place in your life where I know I am and many of us get, where you're looking at life, you've like taken off the rose-colored glasses or the Hollywood-colored glasses or whatever industry you're in, colored glasses, and you go, what is life all about? And how can I make my life be a positive ripple effect into the world? Because that's our legacy. That's what we leave behind, is what people will say about us after we're gone. And I can tell you right now, I've already got good stuff to say about you, Gary. You have already made an impact on me and my son, and we are going to do more of that together. But welcome to Entrepreneur Radio, because at the end of the day, that's what this show is about, making a ripple effect, making an impact on people that are getting into business, that are already into business, and are recognizing, you know what, I'm not sure that now that I've done all this, that this is really what I want to do, or how can I do it better? I just don't know. So I think we just jump into it. Maybe you could talk about a little bit about your entrepreneur story and your history of life.
Happily, Alan. But I want to start by thanking you. First of all, thanks to Christy, a dear mutual friend. You and I have met and become instant good friends. And it's, to me, a gift from the universe. And I just thank you for your friendship. I think it's wonderful to publicly be able to acknowledge that. And that's what awesome. You said a moment ago is, so there's actually, I'm going to read you a quote. I love it. It's a Woodrow Wilson quote of all people. And he says, you're not here merely to make a living. You're here in order to enable the world to live more amply with greater vision, with a finer spirit of hope and achievement. You're here to enrich the world, and you impoverish yourself if you forget the errand. And I do think that from time to time, we have to remind ourselves of the errand. What is it we're here to do? And the beautiful thing is that's never ending. That never ceases. And that's the joy of, you know, living a long life, is you're perpetually in this sort of growth cycle and peeking over the hedge to see what more, what's possible. Who do I want to be? My journey is a little bit, I think I started out in life, Alan, as, my superpower as a kid was daydreaming. I was a pretty shy, introverted kid. And I fell into books and stories when I was really young. And it sort of became, I was a little bit the boy in the bubble, a very romantic, daydreamy, optimistic kind of kid, but shy. And long story short, I grew up in San Francisco. I went to UC Berkeley. I was in the heyday of the late 60s when, you know, our generation's role was to unseat a president and end a war. And I preached all the music at the UC Berkeley campus and brought in Joni Mitchell and all the poet laureates of the day. And I've had really unbelievably wonderful timing on the planet. And from there, I decided that, being a sort of an idealist and a liberally minded guy coming out of Berkeley, that I would champion the underdog. And I became a criminal defense lawyer. I saw the theater as a place where one had to master the art of telling a persuasive story. And that was very alluring to me, maybe over romanticized, but it was very alluring. And I worked for a number of years. Well, actually, before I started law school for a year, and then all through law school and afterward, I worked at a wonderful foundation called Baby Hunters Point Foundation. It's basically the ghetto, this physical geography that is the ghetto of San Francisco, old, beautiful community, beleaguered with problems. And there was a foundation that was not just us as a legal unit representing the indigent adults of that geography in lieu of the public defender, but it had everything. We were trying to keep the families together. We had social workers, we had job skills training, we had drug rehab. We had all sorts of services under this roof that housed 125 or more people. And it was really, you know, like those were the years that was, you know, I was on mission. It was, had so much to do with how I formed as a human being what my values were, in addition, of course, to my wonderful dad and my parents. But I think I've said this to you before. If your life is a book, it was one of the most exquisite chapters imaginable. I learned so much. It was so fabulous. And yet it was not a good match for me. It was a very harsh world.
Yeah.
And I sort of decided, you know, I am a romantic. So I sort of ran away. I wanted to go somewhere I was unknown. I wanted to be anonymous. I wanted to be in a new landscape. And the landscape that called to me was Los Angeles, because it was the home of filmmaking, and that was sort of the next port of call for me. I just felt drawn to it.
All right, hold tight. I want to talk about that on the other side of the commercial break. We're talking with Gary W. Goldstein, $1 billion plus generated in box office receipts around the world. He produced Pretty Woman, Mothman Prophecies, Under Siege, many more, multiple Academy Award nominations, 30 years of playing in this industry, learning, and he'll share it with you right here on Entrepreneur Weekly. Stay with us.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly, part of Entrepreneur Magazine and the Entrepreneur Media brand. You can find us and all good things for entrepreneurs at entrepreneur.com. The magazine's on newsstands everywhere, and this podcast is available 24/7 on demand, along with many other great podcasts and fantastic stuff that'll help you on your journey. Again, go to entrepreneur.com. Gary W. Goldstein joining me, film producer, author, entrepreneur, Pretty Woman. Gary, thank you again for taking the time. Can you tell us, just give us like the quick version of going from being a defense attorney to making a movie like Pretty Woman? Or is that the journey? You didn't go straight there, or did you?
I sort of did. I made a decision to take a left turn, and I packed whatever would fit in my little Carmen Ghia Volkswagen and drove from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And I really was tremendously naive. I had no idea how the business worked. I knew no one in the business. I didn't know anyone in L.A. But I was just stubborn and determined and believed that this was where I was supposed to be. And I just, you know, everybody I met them my five-minute mentor. It was like that just became sort of what I did the first year I was here, trying to meet the right people and learn and have everyone sort of give me one piece of advice that I could, you know, either embrace or not. But eventually, I decided that I didn't want to be an attorney, but I knew how to represent people. So I loved writers and directors. That was sort of the red in the center of the bullseye for me. And I opened up my own literary management company.
Oh, my gosh.
And because I was so new, I was unknown. Nobody knew me. I had no relationships. I went out on the tennis courts. I love playing tennis. And I went to a club and I played outdoor tennis like for hours and hours every day because I realized, number one, I love it. Number two, who are these people that are on the tennis court in the middle of the week? They're freelance creatives. This is where I'm going to meet my tribe. Mm. And so I would say to someone, what do you do? And if they said they were a writer or a filmmaker or a director, what have you, I'd say, that's funny. I represent people just like you. And suddenly I had clients. And that's how I built my little enterprise, which, you know, the first couple of several years, it was all a learning curve. It was, you know, what does a deal memo look like? What's a good script look like? You know, how do you integrate them into the industry? How do you break them in, et cetera? And eventually it started to become a really fun and wonderful business. It was the 80s. It was a great time in Hollywood. And so I just spent 7 days a week like wagging my tail and meeting people and just learning the ropes, so to speak. Mm. And then in 1988, the writers went on strike, shut down all of Hollywood production, film and television. And I went to one of my young clients who I said, dust off one of your scripts. You've always wanted to direct. I want to produce. I'm going to go out and raise a few dollars. Let's go make an indie micro budget film. And we did. Well, this young guy, his name was Jonathan. And Jonathan, I had met because in the mid 80s, I bought one of the early Mac computers and you couldn't plug them in. They didn't do anything. So you had to have a programmer. Jonathan was a brilliant programmer. What I later learned after he spent 3 weeks every day in my office creating software, he learned everything that I did working with talent. And he created beautiful programs that lasted me for many years, but he was very quiet. And it was at the end of 3 weeks when I was asking questions that I realized he's a writer who had written 7 screenplays that sat in the corner of his one-room studio. No one had ever read a single one of them.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, well, let me read something. And if I like it, I'll help you get an agent. Long story short, Alan, I read 3 scripts. He was being very clever. He gave them to me in the order in which he'd written them. They kept getting better. And I finally said, forget the agent. I want to work with you on condition, knowing he had just ended a 5-year relationship with this young age and he was heartbroken, on condition that you write me a spec script with a strong male and female lead, a classic romance, comedy or drama, doesn't matter. Make it so I don't have to, you know, like put it in a room so I don't have exploding bridges or a big budget. That's all I asked.
Right.
And he came back with a script called 3000, which became the film Pretty Woman.
Oh,
it was
one
of the most gorgeous, beautifully crafted stories I had ever held in my hand.
That's neat.
And it was a drama. It was a little bit edgier. Boy and girl do not end up together.
Yeah.
But this is what he put in my hands. And when I read it, I was absolutely speechless. It was so profound. And I knew that I finally had something that was going to, you know, we'd made this little film called Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death. We were cutting our teeth, making these low to no budget films.
Right.
You know,
by the way, I want to just tell you a story. The last time I heard that, we're going to take a break, but the last time I heard that came from Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker.
Mm.
He has the poster for that movie.
Oh, no.
Yes. And when I found out that you were involved with that, I went, I can't wait to introduce you to Mark Hamill. If you don't know him, you guys both live in the same area.
That's, I don't know, Mark.
Oh, you and him would be, I'm telling you. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Gary Goldstein on the line, $1 billion box office receipts around the world, blockbuster hits, Pretty Woman, Under Siege, The Mothman Prophecies, and he's going to help you right here on Entrepreneur Weekly. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
You guys, every so often in life, you meet somebody that you just know has something special. And that for me right now, I mean, seriously, Gary W. Goldstein. You can find him online on all the different social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Gary W. Goldstein. Real easy. Follow this guy. Check him out. He's got something special. I think you are a guy that has something. I like to say this every so often. You're a man with grace. You have such wonderful grace and dignity. And I want to just thank you for that. You know, it's good to see.
Alan, that's so kind. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's true. Gary, and I heard you say something, and this is your opportunity right now. This is your 5-minute mentor opportunity. You get to be the minute. We have 5 minutes, and you said something that I want you to expand on. So many people spend, 10 years in Hollywood bartending and trying to get the gig here and the gig there. Hopefully they meet the guy at the bar or they waiter his table or waitress the table and, you know, they get their opportunity. But you cut through all that garbage and you made a beeline to your tribe. Do you have some advice on that?
A lot of people, when they choose a creative path, and this is not limited to creatives, but in that instance, I think it's more pronounced. They feel like the world is a little bit unknowable. It seems like a dark forest. They're not sure which way to go or how to turn their talent into a viable enterprise. And so they become uncertain and they focus on a result instead of a relationship. And that's the big divide. That's where the Red Sea parts. And if you really want to succeed, focus on people, focus on relationships before the results. The standard tool of a writer in Hollywood, as an example, is what they call a blind query letter. You send a letter with a log line and a synopsis, you send it to a bunch of strangers you've never spoken with, and you say, will you read it and either represent me or will you read it and produce my project? And you're asking these enormous commitments and favors before you've even said hello personally and introduced yourself.
Right.
And I think the success of life is really being very conscious and saying, you know, I know that success is a team sport and that the currency, you know, there's a generosity, there's a grace, there's a curiosity and enthusiasm when you walk into a space and say, I want to meet all the people I admire in this space. And everybody's available if you know how to reach out to them. And that's with humility, with your palms up, just being humble and being vulnerable and saying, hey, I'm new here. Would you be my 3-minute mentor? Would you answer a question or two for me? It would mean the world because I so admire your work, what you've accomplished, who you are, your life story, whatever it might be. But, you know, relationships are everything. I can tell quotes till the ends of time about, you know, the value of, you know, Kiyosaki said the richest people in the world look for and build networks. Everyone else looks for work. There's right. so many, and there's truth in all of, you know, but the idea of being generous and being curious and being other focused and allowing people to get to know, like, and care about you and take a step toward you, that's the long game. It's actually faster, but it's the long game. It's seeing the big picture of opportunity in life. And I think part of the reason people don't do it, which is unfortunate, is they lack the sense of self-value or self-belief.
Yeah.
And, you know, Coelho, I don't know if you're a fan of Paulo Coelho, but he's such a beautiful writer. And he had a line that was, don't give in to your fears, because if you do, you won't be able to talk to your heart. Wow. But if you lead with your heart, if you approach people with that sort of openness and that kind of genuineness or authenticity, it's amazing how quickly people will rally to your cause, who they will offer their life learnings. And
I love it.
Often.
Yeah.
So,
well, as we wind down, I hear the music playing. What you said there, you really nailed it. Be humble, be vulnerable. The relationship you want to make will happen naturally, I think, if you lead with that. And you have to value those around you, whether it's somebody you're working with in a restaurant or somebody that is, you know, taking out your trash. You never know who that person, you know, how that person's going to affect your life. And for Gary, that person was working in his office and brought him a movie called Pretty Woman. And you got to love the one you're with. I wish I had that song, Love the One You're With. Gary W. Goldstein, at Gary W. Goldstein on all forms of social media. Gary, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Alan, it's a joy. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And a little Fleetwood Mac in the background. I know Mick Fleetwood personally. We all got to go our own way.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.